Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo. Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, December 29th, 2011. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. Thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com and PRN.fm.
And today you can hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we've got another great show for you today that's going to include Here We Go Again with Mammograms. A UK study shows that mammograms could be doing more harm than good overall.
And the American Cancer Society is backing down on some cancer screening tests.
Drug treatments for Alzheimer's disease are pretty pathetic. And there's a new research drug that's out there that might be just some of the answer, but may have to wait for that.
And could inflammation cause nutritional deficiencies?
We're back to antidepressants again. They actually make depression worse some of the time. We'll talk more about that.
And aspirin is not worth the risks for healthy women, and much more.
So if you want to join us in our conversation, you have questions about your topics or your health, give us a call at 888-874-4888. Hey,
well,
Vicki, have you gotten your shopping done this year? Christmas is just around the corner.
Well, I've done most of it. Now I've got to wrap it.
Boy, I'm sure glad that there are wives. I'm not so good at that. I'll say. I have to
Thank
practice,
you very
don't
much.
I? Yeah, well, there's still time, right? Boy, the lines out there should be getting smaller or longer at this time of year.
Oh, it was terrible last night. It was like a cattle line, you know, like when you're standing in line at Disneyland or to go skiing or something.
You know, this is all supposed to be about Jesus. I think it's more about the almighty dollar these days. And I think we've lost the true spirit of Christmas. Although people sure jumble around trying to do things and you hear the Christmas songs, it kind of brings you closer to spirit, doesn't it?
Well, and going to church does, because they talk about that part of Christmas.
Yeah, well, that's true. But then they talk about it every Sunday, too, don't they?
No, but in a different way. There's a lot more charitable things going on during Christmas season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's true.
So, there was this UK study in the British Medical Journal on 100,000 women questioning the benefit of mammograms. And they claim that they do more harm than good. You know, if you think about it, they did this study and showed that 1 out of 2,000 women with a mammogram for over 10 years have prolonged life, and 10 healthy women are treated unnecessarily.
You just said a mouthful there. You have to treat 2,000 women for 10 years to prolong the life of one person. That doesn't exactly sound like a test that's, you know, going to send you home screaming that this is a test I have to do. And yet, those are the numbers. And the UK scientists came out and published in the British Medical Journal. That's a big deal to me.
Well, mammograms are pretty political, and we've all been pretty brainwashed about getting mammograms. And people get up in arms and get upset when you tell them not to get them so often. Now, in the UK, they're requiring them every 3 years in the age range of 47 to 73.
They're making the suggestion of every 3 years. And, you know, you could do that. I think that we should use our common sense. You know, we're talking about screening women who have no symptoms. They're just going to screen you because they want to screen to see if there's a little tiny cancer there.
And then one of the things that happens is they end up with all these false positives with the overdiagnosis and unnecessary treatments that are very upsetting.
Well,
for
the
women.
Treatments aren't small. And if you think they're going to treat 10 women, you're talking about surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy in these women that don't have a cancer that's going to kill them. It's sort of like we've gone so overboard. It's like the tail is wagging the dog. The idea is supposed to be to screen for cancer and to find things that are positive that are going to save lives, not just sustain something that in theory makes good sense. Because we've got this idea that if you find a cancer when it's early, that that's the time to find it, and that all those cancers are going to be treatable and are going to be saving lives. And it's not true, because a lot of those cancers spontaneously go away. And the question is how do you find them, the ones that matter, and how do you not find the ones that don't matter?
And this is the reason that we talk about this topic so much, because people need to hear it over and over again, because they're already so brainwashed the other direction.
I know. Women are up in arms saying, you're trying to take our test away. You don't really want to save our lives.
You just want to save money.
You just want to save money.
But it's about making money.
Well, it is about making money. That's what the whole thing is about. And you wouldn't see the connection maybe between Big Pharma and the and doing mammograms, but there's a huge connection there, because Big Pharma makes a lot of money when we have more people to treat, whether they need it or not. So we're looking at finding cancers that aren't going to kill you, particularly those ductal carcinoma in situ, where about 2% of those cancers will kill you. The other 98%, once you find it, you're going to scale the bejesus out of people, so that they're going to say, well, I can't take that 2% risk. I'm going to take my treatment whether I need it or not. It's sort of like they're sacrificing themselves to be able to not have cancer so that they'll be there for their families.
Well, we have a friend that did that, actually, because she didn't want to have it hanging over her head and be having to check on it all the time. But the problem was she ended up with an infection, and she had to have more surgery and a problem. And then she had a problem, I think, with the prosthetic breast and so forth. But the other thing is, we hardly ever hear about breast thermography. That should be in the headlines. That should be all over the news.
Well, that's true, because see there, what you're doing is you're doing a test of physiology, meaning it's looking at how the body functions, whether it's a cancer or it's not a cancer. There's a difference in a cancer cell and in a cancer environment than there is in a normal cell. The cancer cells have a lot more blood flowing to them, and they have about five times the metabolic activity that a normal cell does. So there's a lot of heat coming out of a cancer cell and a lot of heat coming out of the blood that is surrounding the cancer cell, because there's this thing called angiogenesis, neoangiogenesis, which means new blood vessel growth, that stands out because there's a lot more of that around a cancer cell than there is around a normal cell.
And the other thing is, too, is that the breast thermography shows this up a lot more in the younger women that are under 50.
Well, that's right. And the breasts where you can't tell so much. Because what you're looking at is a very dense breast in women under the age of 50. They often have fibrocystic disease. And if you do in that setting, the risk for getting a cancer is five or six times higher than if you don't have that. So what we're doing is looking at tests that look at anatomy. When you talk about the mammogram or the ultrasound or most of the MRIs that are at least without dye. And so you wind up not knowing what you're doing.
And with mammograms, because of the radiation, sometimes you're actually causing breast cancer.
Well, if it takes 2,000 women, to extend life for one person over 10 years, you're talking about an awful lot of cancers are going to be caused, because one in about maybe 1,000 or 1,200 or maybe 1,500 times you do this test, you're going to cause a cancer. Now, not all of them are lethal.
So you're prolonging the life of one person,
and you're causing many other cancers.
More than that. Yes.
Definitely more than that. So we got a real issue here that the British Medical Journal people are talking about, and I think they have a point that's well taken.
Well, we need to pay attention and listen to them and not just be so taken up with our own technology.
Well, it's not just our technology.
With it.
Yeah, sure. It's the people like the American Cancer Society who are out there saying that we need to do these tests. It's people like the mammography industry that wants to continue to keep their product being used. It's the radiologists who depend on their income in part for that, particularly the ones that specialize in this. It's the cancer doctors who are doing the surgeries that they're, many unnecessary surgeries, thinking they're doing the right thing.
And
it's the oncologists.
And the patients that are scared to death not to do it.
Yeah, it's a fear tactic that's just, that's why we're talking about in women who are normal, healthy women, a screening test may be a lot worse than doing nothing.
And especially if they have the BRCA gene, which means that they have a tendency to get breast cancer more than other people.
Exactly. Yeah, if you do one chest x-ray on somebody who has a BRCA gene defect before age 20, the literature shows that it raises the risk for getting a breast cancer by 250%.
And here
that's a staggering thing.
And here these people are doing it sooner and more often. In other words, they're actually doing it religiously because they're so afraid of getting breast cancer.
Right.
I mean, some of these women even get mastectomies because they're so afraid of getting it.
Well, if you have a BRCA gene defect, that's probably not a bad idea. But you also have to stay away from x-rays because you're already going to find that most people by age 80 who have that BRCA gene defect are going to have breast cancer.
I think where some people get confused, too, is they're thinking of it as prevention. It's not prevention.
Say that again, because that's so right.
They think of it, of a mammogram, as prevention. It's not prevention. It's detection, and it's not accurate detection because, like the study just showed, the benefits are less than the harms.
Well, I think that's right. You know, and we're way over diagnosing those cancers that are going to kill us. There were a couple studies I want to tell you about that were done that relate to this. One was in doing autopsies of women at age 50, just blind, just biopsies of the breast in women who had died, just all women who had died. And they found that 30% of these women had invasive cancers. And you're going, 30%? How could that be?
So they're dying with it rather than from it.
That's exactly right. Such a big point. They will never die from that cancer. A lot of those just have to go away because a third of the women age 50 don't die from breast cancer, do they?
The same thing happens with prostate cancer.
Well, that's right. Same story exactly. Except that we know more about. At age 50, half of men have prostate cancer. At age 60, 60%. At age 80, 80%.
Yeah, with these statistics, it makes men want to run out and go get tested for it.
They want to get that PSA test, which if it's borderline, leads to biopsies, which leads to finding those Gleason 6 cancers, which aren't serious, and then you wind up with what? You wind up with a prostatectomy or a biopsy.
So do you wait for symptoms?
No, you never wait for symptoms.
So what do you do?
Well,
you're over 50.
I follow my patients, and we are in desperate need of an affordable test to screen those people who have prostate cancer that's going to go out and do something.
So what test do you do?
Well, there's a 3D, 4D sonogram or echo that's done. There's a Robert Bard out of New York University. He's a radiologist there who's come up with this test and published a lot of data on it and says that he can track people who have Gleason 6 cancers, which are those intermediate ones that most of the time, 98% of the time, are going to do nothing, and tell you when they're an issue. So he can identify with this test what that cancer looks like inside the prostate.
What's this test called?
3D, 4D echo or sonogram. So it's a special kind of sonogram that's become, it's more high techy. It costs about $800, but worth every penny because
will insurance cover that?
I don't know. We don't have it out here that I know of, although I need to check again because when I checked a couple of years ago at UCSF, which is where I do a lot of my work, they didn't have it. It wouldn't surprise me if they do now. I need to check that again because those patients who have those early cancers that 2% are going to kill you and 98% aren't, you could do this test and see what the size of the cancer is, what its location is, whether or not it's extended beyond the boundaries of where the prostate is, and how aggressive the blood supply looks to it.
When would you suggest that a man go get this test, though?
Anytime somebody's been silly enough to get a PSA and it's borderline.
Oh, okay.
Or if somebody's, see, the urologists are dragging their feet. A few of the more progressive ones are saying, you're right, we shouldn't be doing these tests, just like maybe an occasional radiologist will say, yeah, we're overdoing it with the mammograms, and we shouldn't be doing the mammograms in women under the age of 40 or under the age of 50 unless there's a special reason to. So the reason to in a man with prostate cancer would be if he's got a biopsy that was done that showed a Gleason 6 cancer, which, again, is not so serious, and then follow them with this test over time and see if it's changing. So maybe in 4 to 6 months. And then in that case, follow the PSA, because that's one time when you want to do the PSA test, is when you know it's abnormal and you know you have a cancer. You'd like to see if the PSA is rising, because the height of the PSA, very often and almost always if there's a serious cancer, is related to it.
Hasn't there been recent information about not even doing PSAs on a routine basis?
Yes,
on
indeed. That's what
even from the person that invented the PSA test.
That's right. There's a guy named Thomas Stamey from Stanford,
okay,
who in the late 80s said this was a good test to do, and he picked up a lot of cancers that we didn't know about. But now we're picking up too many. We're picking up the ones that you don't want to know about, the Gleason 6s that are like the 2% are going to kill you and the 98% aren't, but you're going to wind up treating a lot of those because of fear.
So if a man's over 50, should he refuse for the doctor to do this blood test?
If there's no special reason to do it, I would say yes.
What would be the special reason?
Well, maybe somebody else did one before and it wasn't quite normal. Maybe on the rectal examination they found a lump. Okay. Maybe in situations like that you would consider that. At least I would. But I'd want to know more. That's why we need another test. We need a test.
But not to just do it routinely across everybody that's over 50.
Well, if the test was affordable and it was like a 3D, 4D sonogram.
No, I mean the PSA. You don't want to do
the
that.
The PSA routinely. Is cheap, but the PSA gets you into trouble because it's over-diagnosing things. So there's another test that's out there, too. It's called an MRI with spectroscopy, which is done at UCSF. And actually, Medicare pays for this test. But it's $5,800.
Jeez.
And, of course, you have to be in that situation where you're not sure what's going on. And I haven't got the heart, okay, to spend Medicare's money like that in a time like this when it's going broke. So there are
tests.
So
what kind of patients would you do this MRI?
On the same ones. The MRI with spectroscopy, I do it on the same patients as the one I do a 3D, 4D sonogram. But yeah, I've been sending my patients in the past who've had this to New York to see Dr. Robert Bard.
To do the test,
yes. So,
but now if they do the MRI with spectroscopy
MRI,
you would do that here.
If I was going to do it, but again, it's a $5,800 test. That's why I said we need new technology. We need a new test. Mm-hmm. We need something that's affordable, that gives you the same good information. You know, maybe we need to have the sniffer dogs that we talked about some time ago. They could smell cancer on you. And this was published, actually. Women who have breast cancer, the sniffer dogs could detect it. So we have an issue here that's a real challenge. We don't have a practical answer for it. We're over-diagnosing and over-treating a lot of cancers that don't need to be treated. And we just have to start waking up and finding new ways to investigate this. We need our technology industry to catch up with this.
Well, also, you know, you were just talking about the sniffer dogs. There is a test that just came out, a breath test from a company called Metabolomics.
Uh-huh.
And it can detect lung cancer and differentiate even between the types of lung cancer in humans. And this is a breath test. And their accuracy, they say, exceeds 80% in lung cancer and 90% accuracy in detecting the subtypes of it.
Well, think about it, Vicki. What we've got here is a breath test, okay? We know that the breath has thousands and thousands of chemicals in it that are off-gassed by blood in the lung. As blood goes through the lung, everything in blood outgasses, meaning it comes from the blood, goes into the lung, and comes out into the breath. And so you get a whole array of information that if you know what it means, you know what the metabolism inside the body is. So cancers make specific proteins and specific compounds that no other tissue makes. That being the case, if you could use a spectrophotometer to identify those thousands of things that are there and find that some of those substances are much higher in concentration and people have cancer and maybe don't even exist at all in people that don't, you got a good test. And that's
what
these people are talking
about. And there's probably no radiation with that either.
Nothing at all.
Like with the CT scan, there's a lot of radiation.
Nothing. And that's why the dogs, okay, are even a better way to do it. There's an acupuncturist, Michael Brofman, out in San Anselmo, California, who is a cancer expert, who published some studies in the mainstream literature about his two dogs that could accurately diagnose cancer. And I know when I went to his office to find out about him, his dogs, and his work a few years ago, I said, get those dogs away from me. I don't want to know what's going on. I'd rather not know if I have cancer because I'm of the belief that a lot of those cancers really do disappear on their own. And yet,
what about lung cancer, though? That can be pretty
lung
bad
cancer,
kind of
too.
Cancer.
All of them. So you just, you know, you don't know what to do is what it boils down to. Anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Lynn Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be opening up the lines and taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Words of wisdom for you.
Uh-huh. A little humor in it, huh?
About five of them.
Oh, yeah?
The first one is, you cannot legislate the poor into prosperity by legislating the wealth out of prosperity.
Isn't that true? Absolutely.
What one person receives without working, or without working for, another person must work for without receiving.
That's true.
The government cannot give to anybody anything that the government does not first take from somebody else. Hello.
That's true.
You cannot multiply wealth by dividing it.
That's true, too.
And when half of the people get the idea that they do not have to work because the other half is going to take care of them, and when the other half gets the idea that it does no good to work because somebody else is going to get what they work for, that's the beginning of the end of any nation.
Well, that's an interesting way to look at it. And there's a flip side, too. I mean, there's nothing like the people who are the real gold brickers, who don't have anything wrong with them, who don't want to work, who are just feeding off the rich. But I'd say in the vast majority, almost everybody is on welfare, doesn't want to be on welfare. They've got reasons why they're there. We look at an economy that's bankrupting this country, has already bankrupted 10, 15, 20% of our country. They don't have jobs. They don't have houses. They're into this Occupy Wall Street thing. These people can't do much about taking care of themselves. And what we need to do, as well as point out what you did, is talk about the wealthy, the millionaires and the billionaires who just want more money still. I think this idea of skewed wealth, where one portion of the government or one portion of the people has a tremendous amount of wealth that they couldn't possibly ever spend in their lifetime, is just greedy compared to the masses of people who are poor and in the middle class now, who don't have work and don't have houses and are out on the streets. There's something wrong with that picture.
Well, there are some people that we hear about in the news that are very, very wealthy.
Oh, yeah.
That spread their wealth.
A few, but they still have a lot of their wealth left. And it's not like they should spend it all. I'm not telling them how to spend all of their money. But I am saying that as a human being, and out of respect to my fellow human being, we need to do more to evolve to a higher level of consciousness, where we're really in a place where we want to do something to help these people survive. We need to create more jobs. We need to tax more of the rich people. We need to have a more even distribution of the wealth. Otherwise, what we have is like a dictatorship.
Well, you know, it's really fun, like during the holidays, for example. It's fun to share and to give gifts and all that.
Indeed.
Rather than to have an attitude of just hoarding, because I think some people have a lot of money because that's how they got it. They don't spend it.
Well, that's so true.
And it depends on how you spend it, because some people feel that when the more you give, the more you receive back.
Well, that's indeed true. I mean, what's love all about? Okay, it's about giving without any expectation of return, and about being able to graciously accept what's given to you.
And many times you will get it back in abundance with material things as well,
right?
Just because you've put out that generous energy.
That's so right. And it's so different from what we have today. That's why we have the split of the classes. And this is what happens in almost every culture over time.
Well, look what happens when you travel and you go to look at where the kings used to live and some of the castles and things.
Oh, yeah.
And all the gold and all the extravagant. And here they were collecting all this from the people, you know, and people were, some of them were poor and starving, and yet
you could look
the
at
kings
every,
were lining their walls with gold leaf, you know.
Well, you know, you can look at a lot of religions, and I won't single out any because that's not fair, but a lot of religions have more money than they know what to do with, and it's sitting in a single place. And what about sharing that? I mean, it's sort of like hypocritical to me that we could hoard things like that and not share with the people, because it's supposed to be about.
But a lot of the churches do. They're very charitable. We even noticed that. I remember when we went on a trip to Thailand that we went to a temple where they had a jade Buddha.
Oh, yeah, right.
That had to be worth a lot.
Oh, well, I mean, this
no, or it was emerald. Maybe it was an emerald Buddha.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, the wealth of the religions is incredible. That's why I'm more of a spiritualist than I am a specific religion person. The lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. We have a call from John from Oregon. Hi, John. Are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in. I have some questions about my wife. She was she had breast cancer 11 years ago, mm-hmm. and went through the standard course of treatment at that time, which was surgery, AC chemotherapy, mm-hmm. and radiation.
Okay.
And now 10 years later, she has developed metastases to lung and bone.
Wow. And how is she in pain?
No, actually, right now she's still pretty healthy overall.
Uh-huh. And so what are you planning to do? What's your decision?
Well, she entered a course of treatment that she's been doing for 2 years now, where she was getting treated with Zometa.
Uh-huh.
And the only thing that the oncologist was following was CA-125.
Okay, that's for ovarian cancer.
That's what he's following.
Okay, so he's worried about her developing an ovarian cancer as well. And he's got a point, that might be slightly higher, but there are other markers of breast cancer that could be measured as well, such as the CA-15-3. And the BR-2729.
That's what I thought, too, but I asked specifically, and he told me that's all they're following.
Well, I don't know why. That's it. You could ask him why he's not doing that, because I would ask him why he's not doing that.
That's the kind of feedback that I was hoping I'd get.
What other medicines are they considering besides Zometa? Which I want to talk about in a minute, because there's something interesting about that drug.
There's another medication, and I can't recall the name of it.
So is it a chemotherapy?
It's a hormonal type of thing similar to Zometa.
Okay, there are a lot of... she has an estrogen-positive tumor, I take it?
Yes.
Okay, so there would be hormonal therapies that would be worth doing at this point, I think. And the Zometa, by the way, is a bisphosphonate, which is a drug that helps to protect bone so that it's not so receptive to receiving metastases.
Right.
And we found in some recent studies, I don't know if you are aware of the recent study that's out there, is showing that the actual risk of recurrence for a cancer is quite a bit lower. So it may be one of those drugs, if additional studies document it, that could be one of the uses for people who have cancer and don't want to run the risk of getting bone mets and actually have a higher survival rate. So that's interesting. But for somebody who has bone metastases, I would probably continue the Zometa at this time because of what the situation has been. Although normally I don't recommend it, because the risk for getting osteonecrosis of the jaw, which is a pretty bad illness, is quite high in people who are on it. All the bisphosphonates in the setting where someone has cancer has a risk of maybe 5 to 7%, although the most recent study showed a 0%, which makes me suspicious that Big Pharma had something to do with publishing this study, because there are a lot of other studies that show that.
Well, she's on a hiatus from the Zometa right now.
Well, every 6 months it's given, or something like that. So it's not given every day. It's one of those drugs that can be injected a couple times a year.
She was getting it monthly.
Monthly. Okay, that could be too. So the question is, what do you do at this point? Because I would imagine that she's going to get more chemotherapy, and you're going to feel pressured, and so is your wife, into doing it. But you may want to look into some complementary and alternative things. You know, things like artemisinin, which is wormwood extract. It's sold as artemisinin. Mm-hmm. Is all over my website. If you go to Dr. Saputo, that's D-O-C-T-O-R, Saputo, mm-hmm. S-A-P-U-T-O.com, mm-hmm. and put artemisinin in the search box.
Spell artemisinin.
I'll spell it for you. Have you got a pencil?
I'm on my way to a pen.
Okay, good, because the artemisinin may do some very interesting things to protect against getting cancer,
mm-hmm.
or to make the cancer go away, or to hold it in check. So it's, you got your pen?
Yeah.
Okay, it's artemisinin. Put that in the search box.
That's how I would have guessed at it.
Okay, good.
There's another
substance that's a plant derived substance called methyl jasmonate. That's J-A-S-M-O-N-A-T-E. And I have, that's also That's had tens of thousands of hits. People are really interested in that. These are both safe approaches that can do a lot to take care of cancer. But it's time for us to take a station break, John. If you want to hang on, or you want to call back in a couple of minutes, if you want to hang on, we'll continue this conversation because there's more that we want to go over here that's really important for your situation. All right, so you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. So if you have a question about your health or a comment about what we're talking about, give us a call, and we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888.
And John, our caller, I would just like to say that it's okay to get other opinions. Doctors are used to patients getting other opinions when there's something that's this important. And as far as going on the site and getting the information about the artemisinin and the methyljasminate, print it out and take it with you to the doctor or email it to the doctor so that he can maybe have a chance to get familiar with it before you come in. Now, some doctors are difficult to talk to about alternatives because they get defensive right away. They want to do it their way. But the doctor works for you. It's not the other way around.
You got to keep that in mind. And the other thing to remember is that there's a lot of other things that you could do besides the medicines that fight the cancer. You want to be sure that you exercise and you want to do what you can to make sure that you're getting enough sleep. Those are two huge things that can change the risk for the rate at which metastases come back. All the lifestyle things. You got to get sunshine. Vitamin D is huge. Should make sure that you're eating more vegetables and things like avoiding the foods that are acidic.
And some of the vegetables that are especially good are the cruciferous vegetables in the BRCA family, like broccoli and cauliflower and kale and cabbage.
Yeah, those are very good. And in addition, the ones that have an alkaline pH, things like sweet potatoes, onions.
Just do a Google
whole
on
bunch
it.
You find an alkaline diet and make sure your pH of the urine and of the saliva is close to 7.0 in the morning. Because having a normal pH is a big deal for cancers. They like an acidic environment, and so they'll grow if you're eating an acid diet.
Same thing goes for sugar, too.
We want to stay away from sugar. That's kind of should be a no-brainer, but it's interesting.
Because cancer cells love that, like iron, too.
They depend on it. That's right. So there's a lot you can do, John, that I think is important and is above and beyond what we do in the mainstream. You know, we doctors don't know much about nutrition because we're not trained in it, nor do we know much about detoxification. It's a word that we use, but we don't know the first thing really about how to go about doing that.
But there's always hope, and I think a good sign was that she went for 10 years since the first bout with it.
Exactly. So it may be that this is just a little hiccup and that down the road she'll do a lot better. So that's really important. So anyway, the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. The number is 888-874-4888.
Well, the American Cancer Society, you know, they waffle on the need for screening tests for cancer, and they cater to and they're funded by Big Pharma and the mammogram industry, and in return, it supports screening tests. But they're finally backing down a bit on some of these cancer screening tests. What's going on? Why are they doing this?
Well, that's interesting. You know, it strikes me that they must realize that public opinion is finally starting to realize that the American Cancer Society is not a good organization. They started out with great intentions, and then, of course, they needed money to continue doing the things they're doing. And now they are the richest nonprofit anyplace. They've got millions and millions and millions of dollars stored in their bank accounts, and they're still out tapping us for more money. And, of course, the big thing is Big Pharma has come to the rescue, as, of course, it always does when it has something it wants to try and accomplish, which means to keep them endorsing all the screening tests overdiagnosing so that they can overtreat. Doctors will overtreat with the drugs that Big Pharma makes. You know, and that's what it's about. And that comes to billions of dollars every year. That's no small amount of money. And
And besides the mammograms, which we were talking about before the break, there's also tests like the PSA and the colonoscopy also that pointed out in this particular article.
The tendency is what? It's to do a test and proclaim a test for cancer screening, for early detection, nothing to do with prevention, early detection, so they can find all those cancers so that maybe in an early stage you'll do better at curing people. But what we're finding is that these are proclamations.
They're opinions. They're not science.
Exactly. And so when you don't have good science behind it and you're still mouthing off, okay, and saying you should be doing this test, you're giving the wrong impression out there, and it's bad science. So now there have been lots of articles coming out talking about, do you really need a colonoscopy at age 50? And the question is, probably not, because there are problems with tests like that. When you're doing a colonoscopy, 1 in 200 people, you're going to help by finding something that will be beneficial, maybe a cancer, and maybe you'll save a life even. But you're going to perforate 1 in 200. Or you're going to have a major bleed that's going to require blood transfusions in the hospital. So that's an even wash. But if you're exercising regularly and you've got plenty of vitamin D on board and your level is normal or at the upper side of normal, your risk for the chances of finding something at colonoscopy are not 1 in 200 anymore. They're more like 1 in 400. Now, that's too many normal people who have nothing wrong with them that are being screened. Now, if you have a problem, you've got some GI bleeding or you've got some diarrhea that you can't explain, yeah, do a colonoscopy. Anyway, we're going to come back to this because it's time for your last 2020 tip. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health out there. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. And we'll be back taking your calls and finish up with this topic right after.
Oh, little town of Bethlehem.
Yes.
Away in a manger. You know, I have some holiday and holy day news. This is a headline. Infant discovered in barn. Child Protective Services launch probe. Nazareth carpenter being held on charges involving underage mother.
Oh, jeez.
Bethlehem, Judea. Authorities were today alerted by a concerned citizen who noticed a family living in a barn. Upon arrival, Family Protective Service personnel accompanied by police took into protective care an infant child named Jesus who had been wrapped in strips of cloth and placed in a feeding trough by his 14-year-old mother, Mary of Nazareth. During the confrontation, a man identified as Joseph, also of Nazareth, attempted to stop the social workers. Joseph, aided by several local shepherds and some unidentified foreigners, tried to forestall efforts to take the child, but were restrained by the police. Also being held for questioning are three foreigners who alleged to be wise men from an eastern country. The INS and Homeland Security officials are seeking information about these, who may be in the country illegally. A source with the INS states that they had no passports, but were in possession of gold and other possibly illegal substances. They resisted arrest, saying they had been warned by God to avoid officials in Jerusalem and to return quickly to their own country. The chemical substances in their possession will be tested. The owner of the barn is also being held for questioning. The manager of Bethlehem Inn faces possible revocation of his license for violating health and safety regulations by allowing people to stay in the stable. Civil authorities are also investigating those zoning violations involved in maintaining livestock in a commercially zoned district. The location of the minor child will not be released, and the prospect for a quick resolution to this case is doubtful. Asked about when Jesus would be returned to his mother, a Child Protective Service spokesman said, "The father is middle-aged and the mother definitely underage. We are checking with officials in Nazareth to determine what their legal relationship is." Joseph has admitted taking Mary from her home in Nazareth because of a census requirement. However, because she was obviously pregnant when they left, investigators are looking into other reasons for their departure. Joseph is being held without bond on charges of molestation, kidnapping, child endangerment, and statutory rape. Mary was taken to the Bethlehem General Hospital where she's being examined by doctors. Charges may also be filed against her for endangerment. She will also undergo psychiatric evaluation because of her claim that she is a virgin and that the child is from God. The director of the psychiatric wing said, "I don't profess to have the right to tell people what to believe, but when their beliefs adversely affect the safety and well-being of others, in this case her child, we must consider her a danger to others." The unidentified drugs at the scene didn't help her case, but I'm confident that with the proper therapy regimen, we can get her back on her feet. A spokesman for the governor's office said, "Who knows what was going through their heads, but regardless, their treatment of the child was inexcusable, and the involvement of these others frightening. There is much we don't know about this case, but for the sake of the child and the public, you can be assured that we will pursue this matter to the end."
Jeez. It's amazing how points of view differ depending on what what era we live in. That's an amazing story, Vicki.
You know, it's interesting too. Just recently I was interviewing some psychics. Mm-hmm. And people that have this this ability, uh-huh. They do see angels and they see spirits and they see things uh-huh. in guides and so forth that we don't see, and uh-huh. we haven't been trained that way or whatever. But I just felt that it was pretty interesting, and that some of the things, some of these ladies that I was talking to talked about how some of the things in the Bible are psychic, mm-hmm. you know, like some of the dreams and some of the visions of angels and so on and
well,
so forth.
Well, the nature of the times is what usually dictates what's acceptable and what's not. And you take things that we don't know about, we almost categorically throw them out. And you look at the story of Jesus there, which is a beautiful story, and you can take it out of context and tell stories like this, and really it's a parody on how we operate in this culture today. And maybe there was a lot of that happening at that time, too, although that there wasn't so much of it.
No, I'll say. So, but, you know, we do this now with, like, children that are sick. Sometimes Child Protective Services takes them away from their parents to force them to have, like, chemotherapy or AIDS treatment and that kind of thing.
There are a lot of things about the way we live our life that we just do. And we should be open-minded about new things. I know back in 1992, when I started thinking that there were styles of practice outside of what I learned in my training that might be useful to know about. And, of course, had been told by my professors years before that wasn't something that we should be respecting, because only the medical doctors were scientific and doing decent work. But I knew better than that. And so it was not cliche. There was not an acceptance of chiropractors and acupuncturists and body workers and people who are doing other kinds of herbal medicines or Ayurveda or Native American medicine, et cetera, et cetera. And it piqued my curiosity is to say, well, these have been around a long time. There are a lot of people still doing it. Western medicine is actually not the most popular form of treatment in the world. We're just one new actual field that we pay more attention to because
that's
we're
where
in the midst
it is.
Of it.
It's here.
But when you look at what it's doing, I mean, first of all, we can't afford it because it's spending $2.8 trillion a year. The safety's come into question because there are about a million deaths every year that are connected to medicine. And how well is it working if 50% of us have a chronic disease? I mean, those people that say that the style of healthcare that we practice in the so-called modern world today is the cat's meow are very mistaken. And it's not as though we don't do some unbelievably wonderful things. We're putting in new hips and knees and shoulders. We've got microsurgeries on the eye. We're doing all kinds of very technical things that without a doubt can save some lives. But we're over-technicalized. We're overdoing. We're over-diagnosing. We're over-treating. And what we should be doing is going back and looking at a healthy lifestyle. What happened to wellness and prevention? What happened to personal responsibility? What happened to caring for one another? What happened to living in community? I mean, those things are poo-pooed. We need to get the technology more. It's more important to, you know, send a man to the moon than it is to clean up people that are sitting in the streets of New York and San Francisco.
Or our environment.
Yeah, I mean, we're raping the earth. I mean, all these things we think are okay, and we call that forward progress. All that is an expression of greed, some of curiosity, which I think is a healthy thing. But where's the balance? Where do we have the goodness in our heart to take care of our own first? Why don't we go off and fight wars like we do so freely in other countries, and we've got people living on the streets? We've got Occupy Wall Street as a huge thing that's now become a national thing. It's like an epidemic where people are waking up.
I was talking to somebody yesterday that was concerned about his son because he said his son was worrying so much about politics and things. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, that's because our legislature doesn't.
Well,
I mean, they're thinking about right now. They're not thinking about the future. Well, they're not thinking about other generations.
No, they're thinking about getting reelected.
And the reason that all these diseases and things are on the rise and our health is going down the tubes is because there's so much pollution.
Well, that's part of it.
We've managed to pollute the water and the air.
Well, we also have a system that pollutes us when we take the treatment. So you're talking about taking...
Yeah.
I mean, there aren't any drugs out there that do nothing.
It's about prevention. It has to be about prevention.
It's about lifestyle. Yeah. You live a healthy lifestyle. Eat right, exercise right, sleep right, reduce your stress levels, maintain a decent weight, and have a purpose in your life. And you'll have something that's called a community. Isn't that a bizarre thought? And that's what we should be working towards. And we're all messed up. You know, I get very upset when I think of what Congress is doing. And I, quite frankly, you know, I voted for Obama, and I was so inspired when he took office, and I wanted the change we need and all those things that come from it. And then I watched what happened. And what I'm seeing is somebody trying to do the right thing but being stymied every time he turns around. I don't see the point of voting in the next election that's coming by. Does it matter if you vote for a corrupt Democratic Party or Republican Party? But I'll tell you why I will vote. It will be to vote against every incumbent, every single incumbent. I don't care what they come back and tell us.
That's how to get change.
That's one way to get some change. You'll get some new blood in there and get these old farts out of there.
And they won't have had all the pressure from the lobbyists and being paid by all the pharmaceutical industry and so forth.
See, look how long it takes us to get political, Vicki. Here we're on a health talk show, and we're talking about Congress because it's directly related.
Yes, it is.
So,
well, anyway, we were going to finish up about how the American Cancer Society has been waffling on.
And we're
going to
do that in just a minute, but somebody's been waiting here. We've got a call from Mary from Atlanta. So, Mary, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing terrific. I listened to you guys relocate to Georgia, and I'm so glad that we're able to get you by computer, and that's the only way we can get you down here. But anyway,
well, thank you, Mary.
I just want to commend on the
Listen, we're a new
program,
show. You know, we just started in April, and this is an internet radio show. Tell your friends about it, because we could sure use more people listening and more questions, because we got a lot that I think we can help people with. So, anyway, why did you call in today?
I just called in to let you know that I go along with everything you're saying, and the pH, you know, I keep my pH down, you know, to 7.5 or whatever. But I just
Well, 7.0 is what you want, not 0.5. That'll get you in trouble, but that's a good point.
You say 7 what?
7.0.
Well, 7.0, okay.
Yes, yeah, when you get that pH paper at the drugstore, and you test your urine and you test your saliva in the morning, you want it to be 7.0, and most people are more like at 5.5 or lower even, which is a more acid environment, which cancer cells like. So
especially if you eat meat, I've noticed that it becomes more acidic.
So that's just one aspect.
And if you eat a lot of leafy green vegetables, then it goes to a higher pH for alkaline.
That's right.
Well, I became a vegetarian. I don't eat any meat.
That's a good point. And that's good, because that will help with your pH. There have been many studies that have been done that show eating more like a vegetarian does better. So that's good. Did you do anything else?
Well, that's the only thing I do, and I don't take any medication. I just take herbs, you know, for my
And what you had cancer how long ago?
Last November, I was operated on for uterine cancer.
I see. Okay, and is there any sign that it's coming back, or are you just cancer free?
I go back every 6 months for checkups, and they said it's no sign. They said, "What if I'm doing? Keep on doing it."
Okay, that's good. Well, lifestyle's real important. You got a good point. So what you eat is a big deal, Mary. And exercising, you know, every day for a half an hour so you sweat is a way to detoxify. When you sweat, you sweat out all the poisons that are in you that maybe had something to do with causing the cancer. And it's really important to get 8 hours of sleep every night, because that's when your body repairs itself and regenerates.
Well, it sounds like you're doing great. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, it's programs like yours that keep me going.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that you benefited from it. Is there any other aspect of what's happening with your cancer that you'd like to ask me about, or is that going to do it?
Well, I just want to ask you the fact that I don't eat any meat, and they told me to eat, my naturopath told me to eat organic meat if I wanted to eat meat. What's your opinion?
I think it's better not to eat much meat in that setting. The studies that I've read lead me in that direction.
But lean meat, a little lean organic meat.
Well, I wouldn't particularly encourage it. I think, I'm not the authority on it. I've researched it. And if I had cancer, I wouldn't be eating much meat. I'd be eating more of those cruciferous vegetables. Anything that's a vegetable, I'd probably be eating. And I'd be trying to balance my pH to the right place. And, of course, there's other things about lifestyle are really important as well. And then if something happens, you know, you want to at least consult your oncologist and maybe even get a second opinion to see whether or not you want to consider the possibility of a chemotherapy, although I think in general they don't work that well in that disease.
I just wanted to bring up here, though, that from meat, particularly lean beef, that, you know, without the fat, provides us not only with protein, but zinc, vitamin B12, B6, niacin, and selenium, phosphorus, choline,
it's got
iron,
a lot of good
and riboflavin.
Well, the main
so
thing,
probably
Vicky,
a good idea to be supplementing with that.
Well, only two things, the zinc and the B12, because you can get the rest anyplace else.
Okay.
So I'm not a big meat fan, and the people who wrote this article were from the Cattlemen's Association, so you have to be a little suspect of it. So, Mary, I hope that helps you. Thanks for calling.
Hello?
You have a great day.
Keep up the good work.
Right. So, I mean, the cancers are such a tough problem, and there's so much involved with why we do what we do in terms of treatment. And in general, I'd have to say, for some kinds of cancers like lymphomas and for testicular cancers and for leukemias, we can do some real life-saving, and that's a good thing to do. But for a lot of the solid tumors, the pancreas, the lung, the kidney, the brain, those are really tough. And chemotherapy would be a consideration, but there would be other kinds of alternative therapies that I would recommend looking into as well. So I think that it's important to I would go to our website at drsaputo.com and put your kind of cancer in there, or look at things like methyl jasminate or artemisinin or pH balancing, and you'll have access to about 2,000 audios and videos that talk about a whole lot of different kinds of healthcare issues. And it's a free site, by the way, so you don't have to pay anything. You do need to join it, which means you'll have to put your email address in there, but you won't be bothered by us, and there's no money. You don't have to put in a credit card. It's just a free site. Okay.
So are we done with the cancer screening?
Yeah, I guess we could be done with that. I mean, I'm still hacked off at the American Cancer Society. Every time you raise that issue, I start going insane because I see how they're such a powerful organization that are very much into early detection, and they're doing nothing about prevention. In fact, they are supporting companies that have a lot to do with causing cancer because they have cancer-causing chemicals in the products that they make. There's something wrong with that picture. And, they, of course, they're in bed with the pharmaceutical industry big time. I just have a hard time with them.
Okay. Well, you know, there's a drug treatment for Alzheimer's is lacking. And the scientists say that the current drugs for Alzheimer's aren't so good. And now they have this experimental drug with more promise. And
well,
some of the Alzheimer's drugs that they use now are things like Aricept and Exelon and Razadyne.
Uh-huh. Well, that's one group of them that helps to make acetylcholine in larger amounts. It's a neurotransmitter that's important for memory and for keeping our intelligence right. And when those levels drop, then we're in more trouble. But these drugs, they're a pittance. I mean, they do very little. It's like they have a fleeting few months of where your memory may be slightly better and you may be a little smarter, but it isn't much.
But people need to be aware of the side effects from these drugs.
Well,
like,
also,
is it worth it to take it for just a little bit of help?
That's really
fleeting,
right?
Memory, you know.
Well, there are a lot of things that happen. I mean, all kinds of GI side effects, including ulcers, headaches, seizures, insomnia, fatigue.
Fainting.
I mean, it's not like it's some panacea. It's not some fantastic thing that's going to go out and save your life. It's not they're there, is what I would say. And then there's the other drugs that are out there, too, that are being used, like Namenda, which are also play with neurotransmitters, doesn't do much. The diet probably is a more important approach to take. And what I like to do is look at Alzheimer's disease as an electrical brownout. You know, in the summertime when everybody's got their air conditioner on, we don't have enough power, so the power goes out. Well, the same thing is happening to nerve cells. They're losing their capacity to make enough ATP, which is the energy currency of the cell, to be able to function right. So we like to do things that support that. And if you go to the website and put in Alzheimer's disease, because there's not time to do it today to finish up on this, go to drsaputo.com, put Alzheimer's disease in there, and you see these treatments that we use for it that I think are much smarter than what we're using today.
And I think instead of giving people more chemicals like the drugs, which are adding to all the pollution that these people are getting, we need to be getting at the cause of Alzheimer's.
Well, we're trying, but we're not doing a very good job of it. And we think we're going to solve it by finding something that's going to fight it. I think what we need to do is clean up our environment and not trigger those genes like the APOE4 gene into doing what it can do to really cause problems. So
get some B12, coconut oil, niacinamide, curcumin, and choline in your diet.
All right. Go to the website and check it out. All right, we'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news and health and take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.FM and drsaputo.com from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time. Prescriptions for health will also be archived on drsaputo.com as well as PRN.FM.
And if you've enjoyed today's show and you'd like to have more information on the topics we discussed, go to drsaputo.com and check out our fast track videos. And remember, lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
And remember, if you like this show, and you obviously do, or you wouldn't be listening, tell your friends.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.